Innovation Rockstars. Innovation Rockstars.
In this episode, we are joined by Dolby Laboratories' first ever foresight strategist, Tessa Finlev. In her role as head of foresight, she has launched an internal Futures Council, a company-wide resource that scans the horizon and connects the dots back to Dolby. In addition to a brief explanation of how Tessa accidentally became a futurist and a short dive into the foresight activities at Dolby Laboratories, we address the core question of how to run a Futures Council. If you want to learn more about the characteristics, responsibilities, and goals of such a council, but also how time travelers come into play in that context, you shouldn't miss this episode.
Now on Innovation Rockstars.
Hi, and welcome back to Innovation Rockstars. My name is Chris Mühlroth, and in this episode, I am thrilled to welcome Tessa Finlev in her role as a head of foresight at Dolby Laboratories. So let's explore how Dolby is practicing foresight, how foresight is being developed in general, and also why Tessa calls herself an accidental futurist. That's kind of interesting. Tessa, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. And we do start straight away with a short 60 seconds introduction sprint. Now, this is, as always, all about you, your career, and also your current role. So for the next 60 seconds, the stage, the virtual stage is all yours. Let's go.
Yes. Thank you. So I am the head of foresight at Dolby, their first internal futurist. And I'm also just launching my own consulting firm. You can find us at veryfuture.xyz. And I recently relocated to Kenya with my family. So that's a big reason why I've opened up my own consulting firm. But Dolby is my primary dance partner, if you will. Been working with them for the past 3 years on building organizational foresight capacity across the company, setting up a program, an ongoing Futures Council. And I'm also collaborating with Institute for the Future over in California and Institute of Future Studies in Copenhagen, Copenhagen Institute of Future Studies. And so very excited about that future for myself and the future over here in Kenya. So that's me in that short 60-second nutshell.
It is in 60 seconds. So that's an interesting connection. California, Kenya, Copenhagen. Very interesting. All right. Yes. And now, you know, to get to know you just a little bit better, I do have three sentence starters for you. And I would like to ask you to complete those sentences. So let's see where this is going to lead us. Number one goes like this. I do spend a silly amount of money on...
Candy.
Candy.
That is
all right.
My inner child is always with me looking for candy and sweets and sugar. Yes. And I think great. If I were to run a budget, it would actually be an unusual amount of money on candy. But don't tell my children because they don't have the same privilege.
Nope, not for children. Understood. All right. That's great. And then number two, one unusual habit or absurd thing that I love is, aside from candy, by the way.
It probably fits in there. And this one maybe goes in parallel with candy, but I love reality TV. Yeah. And it's maybe not one you would associate with someone in my profession who thinks for a living. Although sometimes those opposite ends, they fit well together, but I love reality TV. And I like to say it connects to my anthropology background. It's like a study of modern man.
It does. And it connects to candy as well. So I understand where you're coming from. All right. And number three, that's an interesting one. One advice I would give to a smart, ambitious, let's say, college student about to enter the real world is?
Stay focused and stay the course. If you are interested in something and it's not quite working out, just keep pushing and stay focused. Because the people who I've noticed, they really go far. They've been working at the same thing for a long time. So stay focused.
Great advice. That is super
and have
helpful.
Fun. Like, try and not stress about it.
Of course. Stay focused and have fun. That is utterly helpful, I guess. Thanks. Yeah. All right. So, in the tagline on your LinkedIn profile, you know, I read accidental futurist, which I find quite funny. So, can you tell me about the accident that actually led you to being a futurist?
Well, the primary accident is that I found a job posting on Craigslist, which is a website in California that used to be the primary place to get jobs. It was a job posting for Institute for the Future. And I didn't know anything about the field at the time. This was in 2008. I got the job and I ended up working with Institute for the Future for about a decade. And I'm still working with them in a relationship with them. So it was a literal accident in that way. And then I think also just in terms of my professional identity, to be able to call myself a futurist or a foresight strategist, it's something I've had to very slowly grow into and find comfort in. It feels like a very accidental coincidence, or not a coincidence, but just an accidental happening that I don't quite know how I got here, but I feel very, very fortunate and very happy to be here.
Yeah, so it's good that it happened, but you just don't know how it came about, and which is fine.
Yeah.
So how did then your journey, you know, lead you to starting the corporate foresight movement, if you will, within Dolby?
Well, there's such a clear hunger for this kind of work inside any organizational setting, inside a corporation. And inside any institutions, really, people are so hungry for structured ways to think critically about the world, to think about what's happening, to think long term, to think about things outside of the day-to-day tasks that they engage in. We have so many questions that we're constantly grappling with in terms of what's happening in the world. And I find that just on that kind of interpersonal philosophical level, people want to be able to do this. And then from a business standpoint, from a corporate standpoint, there are so many challenges with remaining relevant, finding new opportunities, staying ahead of the competition, that having a structure for internal long-term thinking is a critical piece of that broader puzzle. So it came about very, very organically and slowly internally with Dolby, and coming in and kind of finding out where the energy flows are, where the interest is, what are the kinds of models that make sense? How do you fold futures thinking into a company in a way that is sustainable and has impact beyond a one time, or, you know, every once in a while you might do a presentation or something, but how do you keep it going and make it stick?
And as I learned, you were and still are, you know, spearheading this, you know, entire foresight movement or foresight initiative. What would be interesting also to know is, you know, who were your first followers inside Dolby? Like, you know, from which team, from which department? How did it build up? Yeah,
that is a critical question. So the primary sponsor is the head of our People and Places team, Linda Rogers. Big shout out to her. She's a visionary in her work. And she's been working in the future space for a long time, since the early 2000s. And so that's something that she brings with her. And she was the one who was the first kind of opened the first door and my first champion. Then beyond the head of people, there's the CTO and head of advanced research, and that side that's more sits within the innovation spectrum, and of course, corporate strategy and all those different players.
Yeah.
The connection to the people team, though, is really, it's very interesting. It's actually very, it's very helpful. It's actually a really critical piece of the whole puzzle. So it's fantastic that within Dolby, the people team, that is my actual, that's my house, that's my home. But I roam freely across the company and find allies and people to work with. And having the people team be my primary place is kind of a bit of a superpower, because the people team is seen as having the interest of the whole company, mm-hmm. not one particular business group. having interest in things beyond product development and revenue, but also employee engagement and talent and all of those other things that are critical to making the whole company function effectively.
So that is super interesting, that this, you know, this head of people, but also then the team behind that, you know, kind of where your first sponsors, if you will, or champions, if you will. That is a super interesting perspective to take. Not sure if I heard of that too many times before. Maybe that's indeed a key to unlocking, you know, additional steps inside such an organization, such as Dolby, for example. So that is brilliant. Now, I also understood that, you know, part of your work is leveraging the Itonix platform, the Itonix Innovation OS. And so how did you get the internal buy-in for using any kind of software tool or software platform in general as an individual who spearheaded this entire initiative? So how did that go?
The internal buy-in was relatively straightforward in many ways, mostly because having Itonix is kind of, it's critical to the work. So if you want to be serious about having an internal futures program, an internal structure for thinking long-term, you have to have some sort of centralized platform where people can input data. They can input the things they see, they can rate it, they can discuss it. So having that central, and that then it becomes the archive of information, having that centralized place, it's just critical if you want to do the work effectively. You can try other things, Teams, MS Teams, and having those like team chats and things like that, of course, and emails, you can try all those, but they're more ephemeral because people, first of all, they may literally be ephemeral. They might get erased after a certain amount of time. And then also people just forget because they're sending links and it's going different places. It lacks the same kind of organizational structure. And then the other thing about the Itonix platform, which is critical, and it's also the kind of the more challenging piece, is it forces users to do the hard work, to actually think about the content, to say, well, what is this? Why does it matter? Why is it important? What does it mean? And when you're just sending links around to each other, you don't do that work together. The person who sends it reads it, and then they say, hey, check this thing out. And then other people may or may not read it. But within Itonix, I'm forced to not just send you a link. I'm forced to say, here's the thing, and here's why I think it's important. Now you go ahead and tell me, do you think it's important? And that's the challenging work of getting an internal futures program set up, is forcing people into this like thinking function, and then having a platform to do it in.
Yeah, interesting. And I guess the last time we spoke, you were just about, you know, thinking of introducing gamification mechanics to the foresight process itself. So how did that go? Are you already using that in a more productive fashion, or is it, you know, at a stage where you're still ideating and thinking of how to add that, you know, spice to the process?
We're still at the experimentation phase. It's not really something that's taken off yet. We're still at the scaling up phase where we can fold that in. Yeah.
But do let me know how this goes, because I think that's a really interesting idea to gamify the process and also, you know, keep on you know, the engagement of individuals on that. That's really interesting. Yeah. And so I also would like to dive deeper into, you know, drawing on your experience and your recommendations for organizations, any type of organization, basically, to have dedicated futures teams. But before we do that, I would like to play a quick game. And the game is called Either Or. It's a really simple game. It is very simple. And that's how it works. So I would like to give you two options. You choose one of those options and then spend one or two sentences each to briefly explain your choice. And speed is key. Let's see what happens. Number one, do you either read books, ebooks, or listen to audiobooks, and why?
Audiobooks.
Why?
I've never really read an ebook. I still read the paper books, but sometimes I'll listen to an audiobook.
Audiobooks. Okay, all right. Second one. If you had to decide, would you either stay in your mid-20s forever or stay in your, let's say, 60s forever?
60s forever.
Yeah.
Why? Because you can't go back. You cannot go backwards. And I haven't been to my 60s yet.
Great. All right. And finally, number three, free time, vacation time, either relaxing on the beach or go hiking.
Ooh, both. That is not an either or.
Okay, that's fair. Let's take both. All right. Well, thanks for that. You were very fast in answering those questions. All right, let's get back to serious business. And I learned you do recommend having a dedicated futures team inside a company. Can you tell me more about that? Why do you recommend that?
It is so much work. I think it goes across the board with any kind of innovation program, any kind of foresight program, futures program, where it's easy to have people internally, if something doesn't exist, people will get inspired and they'll try and spin something up. And it's maybe successful at first, but then their day job takes over and they just can't keep it going. Yeah. And it's so much work to get something up and running. And then it's so much work to get something made to keep it going. You need not only someone who understands futures thinking and how to do it and can train people and find out the right levels of engagement that make sense for the company itself. And then you need a facilitator and a trainer and a researcher. You also need a community manager, someone who is able to bring people in and find out what the process is for keeping them engaged. It's just like, it is a full-time job and then some. So to assume that it's something that people can do on the side of mm-hmm. their regular work, it's just going to set you up for a failure.
So let's dive into that for some time. I guess, you know, I've read, maybe let me know if it's still true, but I read you are talking more specifically about a futures council, right? Having a futures council in an organization. So let's define that. What are some of the characteristics, responsibilities, and goals of such a futures council, and also how could it be structured?
Yeah. So yes, at Dolby, we launched what we are calling a futures council, mm-hmm. And we're rounding the corner of year one, so it's still relatively fresh. And it is a council that sits across the company. So what I discovered as I went through a journey of experimenting with different ways of bringing futures thinking into Dolby was the most effective thing. And this has always been the way I view futures thinking anyway. The most effective thing is if you can do it as a collective group and a diverse group of participants. So within a company structure, these are people who sit across all business groups, functions, and they sit across different levels. And they're coming together to help the company have a long-term perspective on what's happening in the world. And so the council is made up of people who sit across the company at different levels of within the organizational chart. And we, of course, have our executive sponsors, the people who help make it legitimate, right? They legitimize it and they bring on some of that internal star power that attracts other people. And then we have our advisors who are sitting next to the executive leadership team and are a little bit closer in on terms of what are the potential topics that we're researching and how are we actually running the program. And then we have time travelers. These are people who are getting trained in strategic foresight, futures thinking, the research methodology. And their work is to do the research, to help us mm-hmm. build a perspective on possible futures without necessarily saying why it matters to Dolby. And then we have our strategists. And that's a group of people who then say, oh, well, these are the futures. Why does it matter to Dolby? What are the potential opportunities or challenges? And then there's another base of people who were going to be activating next year who, using Itonics, those are the raters, the voters. So they're the ones who, it's just the lightest touch. They can come in and actually say, this trend is interesting. It's critical to Dolby, or this one, not critical to Dolby. And so that's our general pyramid of participation, or kind of circle of participation. And it's a bit of, it's like a moving target, really, in terms of understanding what's the best way to engage people, because they all are very busy, right? I mean, they have jobs. And so finding those different ways of getting people's time and attention and being able to use it effectively so that it gives them something valuable for their work. And that's an ongoing process. So then there are the people who are participating and they have their particular roles. And then there's also the, like, what are we producing? How are we actually sharing information out? And we're transitioning to having like a monthly newsletter, which will highlight things that are coming out of Itonix. So the time travelers are putting in signals, and then every month those are synthesized. They're putting in the data that they find about the future, and every month we synthesize that into bigger trends or zones of impact, whatever it might be, and send out newsletters highlighting those topics.
So that is a pretty impressive organization, or let's say a setup, if you will. How many people are currently part of the, obviously, of the growing council?
It's relatively small. There's including our sponsors and strategists and time travelers and everybody, it's maybe about 30 people.
Wow.
A little less. And part of that is because, you know, understanding the engagement mechanism and how to make sure that people's time is being used productively, you want to scale up slowly rather than just have a bunch of people come in and do stuff. And then if they spend energy and their time to produce something and think creatively and then it goes nowhere, it's going to feel very flat.
Yeah.
It's going to feel like they've really wasted their time. So that's why there's that slow buildup. And then starting next year, we're going to bring in another set of people to the time travelers community to help us be the scanners around the world in terms of what are the interesting emergent features that we might be tracking.
And the insights that you generate. So who are you targeting, and how do you activate those insights generated by the Futures Council? So are you rather aiming at decision makers internally, you know, small and narrow group, or are you maybe reaching for the broadest possible audience? What is the goal?
It is a yes and situation.
Mm-hmm.
Where on the one hand, just having people participating in the council as strategists and time travelers and advisors and sponsors, that in and of itself is a goal, because then we're having a growing community of people who are having that kind of framework for how do I make sense of all the noise in the world? And here's a community of people who I can do it with. And then our strategists, they typically are at a higher level in terms of decision making. And that's because we don't want them to have to spend all the time doing the research. Although time travelers, they sit across the hierarchies. Mm-hmm. So it's not divided that cleanly, but we want the strategists to be people who are decision makers, so that when we come to them and we say, so part of our work is also annual futures report. And when we come to the strategists to say, here are our scenarios on blockchain technologies, and here are our scenarios on augmented reality, what does this mean for Dolby? That in and of itself, we're influencing those strategists. And then from that, with that final report using our executive sponsors, then the goal is to influence up through the executive leadership team. And then there are, you know, then there's the innovation side within our advanced research group. Then there's the talent culture side within the people team. So all of these bigger picture futures, they have these implications that are quite broad in terms of what is the company culture? What kind of talent do we need? What's our bigger vision? And so a lot of that is very soft work. And that's why we're also transitioning to having these monthly newsletters. Yeah. They've been quarterly.
Yeah.
But hopefully with a monthly newsletter, those are like a light touch. We'll be able to get another kind of audience to interact and engage with the content.
Yeah, and that's, I guess, maybe also why you'd call it a movement, right? And just not an initiative or something, but you know, clearly building momentum over time. And then, you know, not only starting, but also keeping the momentum on the movement, which is, I guess, which is a key of success, a success factor, obviously, to do that.
And, you know, I love this. I have not thought about it as a movement until saying that. And it's true. It is very true that that is the case. And so I'm going to fold that back in into the way we talk about it. Yeah.
Sure. Do it. Sure. It just feels like. Yeah. And, you know, there is also, I guess, an ongoing debate about where foresight fits best within a corporate context, right? So we learned, you know, you started, found the first champions and sponsors in HR, talent, people, in the people area. Where you are today, and what would you recommend in general? Because many organizations, as you said, they link foresight to, for example, product or innovation or strategy departments. But in your opinion, where does it ideally sit?
I don't know if where it sits is the most critical piece. Mm-hmm. I think that the people who participate need to sit across the company. Whether the organizational home is within the people function or corporate strategy or innovation, I'm not sure that that is that critical, as long as its goal is broader than wherever it sits. So I think if it's within an innovation structure, make sure that it's not solely targeting like product innovation, but also organizational process and culture and all of the things that help products actually get created and defined. And if it's in corporate strategy, make sure it connects to bigger vision. And I mean, if you're doing that correctly, those things should, you know, feed out to culture and organizational process and not just be targeted at the next big innovation or product.
Yeah. Got it. Okay. And, you know, talking about some of the topics, maybe you can talk about that. What are some of the, let's say, most relevant, maybe Horizon 2, Horizon 3 topics you're dealing with currently, just out of curiosity?
Yeah, our topics are, so I will say within the Futures, this, the Futures Council perspective, this is not the corporate Dolby perspective. And the Futures Council within Dolby is sort of a, we're intentionally trying to extend the things that we think about as part of work. And so some of that, and so then there's a blurring, there's a mixing of finding topics that are immediately relevant and top of mind, and finding topics that are very seemingly not quite relevant and maybe further out, not quite related to our industry. So it's a pretty broad mix. That being said, some of the things that come up a lot, obviously within very technical things within audio and video. And then a lot of my work is to push us into broader categories that are more transformational on a global or regional scale. So we do spend a lot of time thinking about democratization of technology, broad access of technology, cloud technology, how there's the shifting of who is able to innovate and make new innovations that traditionally required a big company and a bunch of people with PhDs who have very highly specific knowledge. Nowadays, typically young people, but anybody who is very motivated, very smart on a computer can do things that not that long ago were quite unheard of. So it's really shifting a lot of those dynamics around where are new competitors coming from, where are new products coming from. So we spend some time thinking about that. A personal one of mine is blockchain technologies, trying to, and not necessarily from an evangelizing perspective of this is happening, like, let's all get on board, but to say, if blockchain really takes a hold in whether it's a financial utility or some other social utility or something, these are some ways in which it could have some pretty fundamental transformational effects. And it behooves us to stay aware and to track those so that should it take hold, we're not suddenly kind of left out in the cold. And I think that's something everybody should be paying attention to, even if it feels like blockchain has no relevance to the thing that you're doing. We're definitely in a stage where we should all be paying attention, getting some level of education on what it is and when, how, what's happening.
Yeah, and especially on democratizing technology, that is actually very interesting because I know this strain of thought or this discussion area from the areas of machine learning or artificial intelligence, where of course, you know, the more open source libraries you have and the more knowledge you get, the more building blocks to, you know, train a model or do something else with it becomes freely available or just accessible to even students and you know, kids these days. It's very easy to experiment with that and maybe then, you know, connect it to some problem they see or observe and come up with actually a brilliant solution that 20 years ago, you would need to have 5 mathematicians with a double PhD to come up with that. So that's accelerating a lot, right? And the more building blocks you have, the more building blocks you will have in the future. So it keeps on accelerating. That's the foundation of technology, accelerating technological change. So very interesting to hear that you're observing and also thinking about that proactively.
Pretty yes. Cool. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And, you know, as you're saying too, AI and generative AI, very big space of interest and curiosity. I mean, and it's it's advancing at light speed. So what was happening 6 months ago is already very outdated.
True.
And we don't know the degree to which it's going to impact media content. We know it will, you know, is it going to replace it? Is it going to be parallel? We don't know exactly how it's going to go, but it is definitely groundbreaking.
It is very, very interesting.
To put it mildly. Yes.
Very interesting.
And also for how we work, right? Because now generative AI, like text to image or even text prompt to better text or text to video, whatever it is, it's becoming a work partner. And that's something that we all need to consider, that how do we take these new AI programs and use them as a working buddy? So rather than having to every time, in my case, write a new forecast, write a new scenario, maybe I can work with my AI buddy to get it done.
For example, to fuel creativity or maybe supercharge, you know, creativity and new
creativity.
Ideas.
So
interesting, yes. You know, lines of thoughts. You can follow that. All right. Yeah. That's pretty cool. So I could possibly, you know, talk about that for the next hour or something, but I guess we're already kind of close to the end of this episode. But before we close, two things. One is maybe we can, you know, aim to summarize and I'd be interested to hear your, let's say, 3 key actionable recommendations that you want listeners to take away from this episode with you.
So let's just say for anybody who is interested in building internal futures capacity, be very intentional and small. When you start, make sure you build your ecosystem of allies and make sure you cast a wide net in terms of who you bring in to participate with you. If you keep it siloed off into its own corner, it's not going to be sticky. It's not gonna grow roots. So make sure that you can fold it into your organization across the board.
Yeah, super helpful. All right. And finally, when you look back on your professional career, what would you say was your greatest innovation rockstar moment to date?
Oh, boy. This one is a very hard one for me because it requires really kind of putting myself on a literal pedestal. I think having this one is surprisingly challenging for me. You know, I would say, okay, recently I did a visioning session with a group of senior leaders, and it was a very brief visioning session. And it was, the feedback across the board was very positive, and it fed into some of the strategic directions that they are moving into now. So that is definitely an innovation rockstar moment that I'm quite proud of. It's also just a great kind of example of where having an internal futurist who is not just a futurist that does the research and talks about the future, but someone who can facilitate teams of people to do this work on their own or as a group, it's such a helpful resource to have. And it's not something that just sits around randomly. It's someone you have to actually intentionally go out and find that person and bring them in.
Yeah. And that's when you know you're making an impact. So that's a great rockstar moment.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. Congratulations.
You know what? I'll share another one. Okay. Now you got my juices thinking. This is actually happening tonight because I'm in Kenya. So the time zones.
Yeah.
But one of the goals of the Futures Council, and this is something if people are working on this, something to consider is, I feel like in some ways a movement, yes, but also we're building like an internal hive mind that anybody within the company, if they're saying, I'm trying to work on the strategy of this thing, I'm trying to figure out the future of this thing, they can call on us to say, help us think about this. And so tonight we're actually having a meeting with someone who's working on an internal strategy. And as the Futures Council, we've swarmed on that topic. And so tonight we're having a meeting to talk about that topic with this guy and help him in creating his strategy and making sure that it is future leaning. So that is like the ultimate goal for me is to have that kind of a internal hive mind community movement where the company is aware, oh, you know what? We're working on this strategy. We're working on this vision. We're working on this thing. Let's pull in the Futures Council. Mm-hmm. And so that's a very exciting moment.
So experiencing that kind of pull moments, right? We're creating a pull, not only, you know, pushing.
Not just
to
a push,
the,
exactly. That's right.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, that's actually a brilliant achievement in that short amount of time that, you know, this is now being live at Dolby. So very, you know, congratulations. And I think with those two brilliant rockstar moments, we can close the episode. So Tessa, thanks so much again for being my guest. It was a pleasure. Listening to you, thanks for being able to drawing on your experience and also conclusions from your professional career so far. Thanks again for being my guest.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
All right. And to everybody listening or watching, if you enjoyed this episode, then simply leave us a comment on this episode or just, you know, drop us an email at info@innovationrockstars.show. Now that's it. Thanks for listening. Take care and bye-bye.
Innovation Rockstars.
That was Innovation Rockstar Tessa Finlev on her foresight work at Dolby Laboratories. If you would like to learn more about Tessa and her boutique futures firm, facilitating foresight, then why not visit her at veryfuture.xyz? For feedback on this episode, just shoot us a note at info@innovationrockstars.show. More inspiring innovation stories to be found on our website at www.innovationrockstars.show or on our Innovation Rockstars channel on all major podcast platforms.